Nowhere in the pages of history can one find a greater champion of justice. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
And I'll tell you something else, too, is I cannot stand sissies.
You're going to talk about wrestling, that's redneck talk.
And guess what, Fetzo? I'm the world champion!
Out here in Texas, we learn fast what's going on in the world of professional wrestling, I guess because we get to watch Channel 17 out of Atlanta out here, too. And I know that the Anderson brothers have done a terrific job on Dusty Rhodes. I understand that the Anderson brothers have chased Dusty Rhodes right out of Georgia. Well, Terry and myself are real glad to hear that because we did the same thing up here in Texas. You know, Dusty Rhodes doesn't wrestle here in Texas either, and the reason is because of the whipping that he took at the hands of Terry and myself. Now, being brothers in professional wrestling, Terry and I know that sometimes people have problems, and we understand the Anderson brothers are having a problem among themselves. Well, the Funk family is the premier family in professional wrestling, and the way we stay that way is we take care of our problems. And the last time I had a problem with my brother Terry, well, I just whipped the heck out of Terry, and we didn't have any more problems. Of course, at the time, I was 10 years old and Terry was 6, and I guess he's never forgotten it. But Terry's coming to Georgia, and I'm coming to Georgia in the near future. And we've got a lot of things on our mind. One of the things is the Anderson brothers. We don't know whether we may be wrestling with them or against them in the near future, but we do know this. Terry can help straighten out their problems. Another reason we're coming to Georgia in the near future is Steve Kern and the Georgia Heavyweight Championship. The Georgia Heavyweight Championship is right next to the World Championship, and we feel if we can take that, we'll be right in line for a chance at Harley Race in the World Championship.
Not coming soon enough, if you know what I'm saying. I'm getting kind of ticked off, though. Zabisco coming out here running his mouth. Talk about trick-or-treat. I'll show you trick-or-treat. Here's your trick, here's your treat. Otherwise known as the coma and the morgue. You got your choice. Calling me a little kid, too, Zabisco. It's going to be embarrassing for you to be beat by a kid. You know what I'm saying? You blew it for yourself. And Hot Pup, when you walk that little butt of yours out into the ring and you feel the wrath of the Stinger, the Scorpion, buddy, and you look up and you see those lights in your eyes and you ask yourself, why did I get into this business? Especially with the Stinger looking over me like he is. Oh, and it's gonna feel good too. You're not gonna stand a chance of getting out of it. And that big lug of nothing, Steiner. Ow! I'm coming for you too. That's all I gotta say. Starrcade, Chi-Town Heat, the biggest night of my life, the best athletes. Everyone's been shooting their mouth. I've had my chance to shoot my mouth. And I ain't gonna shoot no more because I'm just gonna do it. You know what I'm saying? Ow! Period.
Stink.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to When It Was Cool Wrestling. I'm Carl Stern. Thank you very much for joining me today. We are back with our weekly rotation of classic wrestling shows. We do a different theme each week to keep the shows interesting and mix them up. And in our rotation of shows, we're back around to the GKT, which is the Greatest Kayfabe Tournament. This is a fictional tournament. 64 men started out. We're going to work our way down to a winner. We're in round two right now. You, the listener, get to choose the winner of each match. You do so by voting on our Twitter account at WIWC Network, at WIWC Network. If you can't remember that, go to the front page of whenitwascool.com and you'll see all of our social media links there. And you can vote. And what this is just kind of a fun way to talk about two classic wrestling stars, do a little bit of biography work and fun nostalgia about these many of them former champions, certainly very popular wrestlers in their day, and pit different people against one another from different eras. Recently watched rewatched and reviewed over When It Was Cool, the Rocky Balboa movie from back in 2006. And that whole movie was kind of centered around the same sort of gimmick. They did the modern boxing champion, Mason the Lion Dixon, played by Antonio Tarver, against the nostalgic favorite, Rocky Balboa, to see who'd win that. And my wife, watching that movie with me, said, hey, this is kind of exactly what your GKT is. And that is correct. That is very similar. It just gives us a way of looking back. And so the way I've been phrasing this is, if wrestling were real, now not a shoot fight, but the wrestlers as presented were real, you know, kayfabe, just like television. I'm not trying to talk about, you know, who would win a mixed martial arts contest or something. We're talking about the characters as presented on TV, and that's what pro wrestling is all about. It's about characters. It's about story. It's about, you know, historically, all the way back into even back into the 1800s. It's been all about the presentation of the different wrestlers and how tough they were and whether this person could beat that person, how athletic they were, their characters. And we oftentimes lose sight of that, I think, in wrestling. We get, especially we insiders and stuff and hardcore fans, people like you and I who subscribe to Wrestling Observer or the newsletters in the past or go to different websites, and we get all engrossed in the business of things. We get all engrossed in star ratings and a booking and who's running the organization and things like that. And those are all great and fun and certainly adds a intriguing degree of fun things to talk about as a wrestling fan. But we got into wrestling originally for the fun of watching it, for the simulated combat between two people, by looking at a storyline and thinking, oh, you know, what if this person wrestled this person? You know, what? Back when I was coming up through the territorial era, I mean, you took a region like Southeastern wrestling, and people would jockey for position in that. Oh, this person's the contender coming up. This person's the Alabama champion. Oh, this person's the Southeastern champion. Well, what's going to happen when the world heavyweight champion comes through the area? Well, will the person from our region be able to beat the world champion who goes to all these different other territories and regions all over the world? And that was the fun of it. The fun of it was in the imagination. So that's what this tournament's about. This episode's match was our closest one ever. It was literally decided by 1 point. It was, for a while, it was showing 50% to 50%, and with 147 votes. So I know somebody won this, but who? Well, finally, I guess the Twitter algorithms worked themselves out. We have a winner, 50.3% to 49.7%. I'm shocked that this match was this close. Dory Funk Jr. loses to Sting. Now, I thought for sure Sting was going to run away with this poll. Sting still active even today in AEW wrestling and putting on, you know, good performances. His character is still over strong. Even though he only, briefly worked in WWE over the course of his career, he wasn't NWA World Heavyweight Champion. He was a rising, very popular star in the mid to late 1980s. I first saw him in Memphis, where he and the person who would later become the Ultimate Warrior were doing a tag team. They were kind of two muscle boys from out in California who had showed up, and that lasted just a second or two until they become Road Warrior knockoffs as the Blade Runners. They didn't last in Memphis long until they went down for Bill Watts Mid-South Wrestling. It was transitioning into the UWF. And so they kind of became Bill Watts Road Warriors for a moment, but look, they were so green and so robotic and they just weren't there yet. Blade Runner Flash, who was Sting, he soon changed his name to Blade Runner Sting, teamed up with Blade Runner Rock, who was, this even bigger than Sting was. He was gigantic. He was black-headed, and, you know, they wore face paint. And he looked like, I mean, you know, gosh, Jim Helwig looked like a absolute, you know, I don't know, like a world-class bodybuilder even at this point in time. And I thought, you know, but both these guys, if they could actually, and this is way before I started reading, or just a few years before I started reading newsletters and stuff, I was thinking, man, if these guys ever get any good, they're going to be something else. They weren't even like Road Warrior good, where you could watch the Road Warriors and then just go in there and beat people to death. Like, the Blade Runners were clumsy and stiff, and I don't mean stiff like hitting people with strong shots. I mean, they were stiff like in their movements. They just weren't that good, even to a novice eye. For whatever reason, Blade Runner Rock gets gone from out of there. Watts fires him, and he goes over to Texas and becomes the ridiculously named Dingo Warrior. Okay, so he kind of changes his appearance a little bit, changes up his face paint, and he does fine out there in world class, and I think it was good to get them separated because they, over in Bill Watts' UWF, they start going a little stronger with Blade Runner Sting, and he's now just Sting, and he becomes part of Eddie Gilbert, Missy Hyatt's Hot Stuff Incorporated, and starts teaming with Eddie Gilbert, and then soon another newcomer, Rob Rechsteiner, and he's, you know, really progressing. Like, Sting really is coming along. Of course, as we know, Dingo Warrior moves up to the WWF, becomes the Ultimate Warrior, has his own separate career path there. Sting is in the more, you know, I would say, work-oriented Jim Crockett promotions. He ends up, when Crockett buys out UWF Bill Watts, he's one of the guys that are brought in, and he is showing a lot of promise, and he's billed, as you know, this hot future up-and-comer. And of course, then there at the Clash of Champions 1 has that great draw with Ric Flair for the NWA World title. And that really caught people's attention, and so he started getting a much bigger push, and then eventually becomes the NWA World Heavyweight Champion himself. He evolves his character later on in the Monday Night War era into that, you know, kind of Sting-related sort of character, becomes a multi-time WCW champion as well, and has a great career. And later on, after WCW folds, he goes to TNA, Impact Wrestling, for a long period of time. And he did eventually make it to WWE, WWF, but it was, you know, after his career was effectively over, he came in. Of course, he got injured. He got his neck injured pretty badly against Seth Rollins, and that looked to be the end of it. He was not really used very well in WWE. We never got that long anticipated Sting versus Undertaker match that I think many, many people wanted and saw as a dream match. And who knows, we may get to that in this tournament. We'll see what happens. But Sting, to me, has always been much better, much more interesting than he was ever given regards to in the newsletters. Like, in a way, I was very surprised to see him not do better in this particular matchup, but it also shouldn't surprise me. He's never really gotten a lot of respect from newsletter readers, especially the Observer. Dave's never really cared for Sting. I mean, let's just be honest. He never really thought he should be in the Observer Hall of Fame. It took Sting forever to get in there. And look, I'm you know, there are certainly negatives you could talk about Sting. He wasn't the greatest all-around wrestler. He was of a certain ilk of and style of wrestlers that was more entertainment-oriented. Whereas, you know, the people that vote in the newsletter awards and stuff like that, especially Dave as well when he writes, he likes the more technically proficient or high-flying wrestlers, the more Japanese-style wrestlers, and that's fine. Everybody's got their style they like and whatever. I like characters. I like characters far more than I do moves. Now, I don't like wrestlers to be terrible. I like them to be at least good. And let's face it, Sting was a lot better than Ultimate Warrior ever was. And I think Sting, and you know, in the same realm, I think his longtime friend and sometimes partner and sometimes enemy, Lex Luger, I also think he gets kind of a bad rap by the magazines as well, or by the newsletters as well. And I think there is a reason for that. For one thing, you know, Dave for years has had his sources, and many of his sources, people like Ric Flair. I mean, there are certainly, you know, people that did not like Lex Luger, you know, in wrestling. He was a very polarizing figure in the locker room. He was, you know, had the reputation of being arrogant and, dare I say, no pun intended, narcissistic. And so people dogged on his work. And I think, though, from a fan perspective, actually watching him, and if from an unbiased perspective, and I've seen social media, you know, post about this recently. I even saw somebody on there posting a clip from a Lex Luger match saying, you know, if Lex Luger, for everything that's said about him, was around today, he would be one of the best workers on the show. Now, I don't know that I'd go that far, but Lex Luger was far better than he was ever given credit for. He was disliked because all the, quote, cool people didn't like him, didn't like working with him. But I think from a completely unbiased standpoint, both he and Sting were far better than they were ever given credit for. Now then, let's go back a little bit further in time to his opponent, Dory Funk Jr. And I jokingly, on a lot of my reviews and stuff, call him Old Boring Funk Jr. because I find Dory Funk Jr. exceptionally boring. Okay, Dory Funk Jr. is even an era before my time as a wrestling fan. Dory Funk Jr., he was like the world heavyweight champion when I was born. Okay, and so as I grew up as a fan of pro wrestling and watching the shows and stuff, whenever announcers and other wrestlers would reflect back on the legends that were before them, I grew up and, you know, started watching wrestling. Harley Race was champion, and Ric Flair soon was going to be champion. So it was Harley Race, Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes were like your primary NWA world champions. But they would all talk about, you know, whether they were as good as the greats like Jack Briscoe and Lou Thesz and Dory Funk Jr. And Dory Funk Jr. was certainly a highly regarded NWA world champion. What I saw of Dory Funk Jr. throughout his career was this guy who had this terrible look. He was sort of balding, but, you know, wouldn't just go ahead and cut his hair. So it was like, you know, he had this terrible hair. He had no real body to speak of. He was a good technical wrestler, but he was not dynamic and exciting. His brother Terry was far more interesting of the two. As an interview, he was, you know, fine, but only fine. And so, by admission, I never got to see the best of Dory Funk Jr., you know, when he was going around the world with a lengthy NWA world title reign, you know, dressed in suits and on TV, you know, mild mannerly talking about how he was the world champion, very much in the Lou Thesz ilk of promos and stuff. So I never got exposed to that. If I had, I would probably have a higher image of Dory Funk Jr. than what I do. Now, there's no question he's a great wrestler. I mean, no question at all. And by way of videotape now, of course, we can go back and watch a lot more Dory Funk Jr. stuff than ever was available when I was a kid. And certainly by the time I really got into Japanese wrestling and tape trading and all that, he and his brother Terry and all their work they did in All Japan Pro Wrestling, I got to see a lot more of Dory Funk Jr. And also of World Wrestling Council down in Puerto Rico. He did a lot of work down there as well. More Florida stuff came out. And so I've got to see a lot of Dory Funk Jr. But speaking as characters, to me, Sting is the far, far, far more interesting of the two. Dory Funk Jr., just to me, is very, very bland. I really like Dory Funk Jr. in a tag team with Terry Funk. I think they complement each other very well. You've got Dory as this reserved, very technical, tough also wrestler who kind of brings things to a sort of a medium level, and then you get the wild, crazy Terry Funk in there with all of his hysterics and antics, and I thought that dichotomy played real well off each other. So I'm much more a fan of Dory Funk Jr. as a tag team with Terry than I ever was as a singles wrestler. But apparently, many people felt differently. I was very surprised this went to virtually a 50-50 draw with only one vote putting Sting over the top. And it wasn't my vote either. I can't vote on these Twitter polls. I only have one Twitter account. I don't have, like, multiple accounts or anything where I can go vote on my own polls. No, when I put it up, it's all 100% what other people think. And so it was pretty amazing to see this play out. And, you know, I think if you're honest, or if I'm honest, looking at this, if it were in fact real, just like this was the GKT, the greatest kayfabe tournament, if we took prime Dory Funk Jr. and put him in a match with prime Sting, and when I think of prime Sting, I think of the flat top, bleach blonde hair, surfer look Sting, you know, from the era where he won the NWA world title from Ric Flair there at the Great American Bash. That's what I think of prime Sting, not the Crow Sting, which, you know, most of his career has been spent as the Crow Sting, but to me he was much more dynamic, much more fun as Surfer Sting. So that's what I picture against that, you know, just from an era before I started watching wrestling, that Dory Funk Jr., you know, the business suit wearing, a very soft-spoken Dory Funk Jr., you know, putting forth his technical wrestling skill. And if you book a match between these two, I think it's going to be about 50-50. I mean, if you're a booker, and let's say I'm Dusty Rhodes back in the day, and I have this match on my plate, or I'm Pat Patterson, or Vince McMahon, or even, you know, Vern or Greg Gagne, whoever, Jerry Jarrett, whoever books this match, I think you go 50-50 with it. You've got to have, you can't just have like the Ultimate Warrior formula of Ultimate Warrior goes in there and just runs over Dory Funk Jr. You've got to, if you're booking this, and since you're booking two NWA World Champions, I think you've got to go with Sting goes in with all of his energy, his excitement, his dynamic, you know, explosiveness, and you have Dory Funk slow it down. It was some time back, you can go back in the archives and look and see, I reviewed a show down in World Wrestling Council between Dory Funk Jr. and Sweet Brown Sugar, Skip Young. And, you know, I think Skip Young was maybe trained by Dory Funk Jr. or at least mentored by him or something, because they worked together quite a bit. But this is one of the first matches I ever watched between the two of them. And I think it was sort of this, okay, so Skip Young was a quick guy, a high flyer, certainly more than Sting, but the thing about it was he was more dynamic than Dory. And so Dory just goes in and shuts him down quick. I mean, just takes it to the mat, works his hold. Dory, you know, more than I'm giving him credit for here, Dory was, could be entertaining, okay? I'm thinking about that Sweet Brown Sugar match. Okay, he had no real problem taking bumps for him and, you know, getting all frustrated with Skip Young's, you know, high-flying stuff. And I think you would play that the same way in a match against Sting, whereas Sting had the power. I mean, hey, you think about, like, Dory Funk Jr. Japan having to wrestle people like Bruiser Brody and Stan Hansen, the Road Warriors and stuff like that. Of course, he could take those bumps too. I mean, and it looks like, you know, he looks really out of place when he does that. You can tell he, in the context of telling the story of a match, Dory Funk Jr. shouldn't be up in a press slam. You know, it looks like he's out of there, which lends credence to the match of, hey, this guy Sting here's got a chance. So I think this match, even though it's two very distinct, very different styles, I think it works. I think this match works very, very well. And I think I'm still remained perplexed at the Dory Funk Jr. backers here. They far more than I expected for here in 2023 for the current present observers, you know, readers or those following on Twitter or whatever, voting on this poll, which seemed to skew, you know, kind of younger than my age demographic. I'm really shocked that they like Dory Funk Jr. as much as they do and dislike. I'm not surprised, actually so surprised about the dislike of Sting. Like I said, I think there's been a real observer, Dave Meltzer, bias towards Sting for a long time. Dave's just not impressed with Sting. Okay, I'm far more impressed with Sting than Dave is. Not that I'm right and he's wrong or he's wrong and I'm right. We just have a difference of Sting opinions here. We also have a difference of Rock and Roll Express opinions and of Southeastern Wrestling opinions and of Memphis Wrestling. We have differences of opinions, and that's fine. Art is subjective, and that is what people, when they get to arguing about this stuff online, that's fun to argue it, but there's no need to get personal or ridiculous because art is subjective. You may look at a Picasso painting and find brilliance in it, where I find just shapes and nonsense. Whereas I can look at, you know, or music, and I can hear a musical group or a song and think this is the greatest thing ever, and you find it excruciatingly boring. I understand. I mean, it's again, difference of opinion. You can't. I love Rush. You can't dance to Rush. Okay, Rush is very mathematical. That's not. That's, they're kind of the Dory Funk Juniors of rock music. Believe it or not, I love them. I don't know why that doesn't translate to Dory Funk Jr. in wrestling, but it don't. But I can understand why people would find that uninteresting or not fun. They like music that's more like Sting, that they can dance to. It's catchy. It's simple. You don't have to think about it. I get it. That's fine. Different people like different things, you know. Some people like Peter Criss. Some people like Freddie Gruber. You know, it's just whatever. And that's fine. It's perfectly fine. And we like to have fun with it here. That's what we're all about. It when it was cool is having some fun. And I ain't mad about Dory Funk Jr. nearly winning this match. If anything, I find it very, very interesting. And I honestly think it would be a really, really great match. So Sting's going to advance in our tournament to move on to the next round. We continue onward now, and you're going to need to follow us at When It Was Cool to find out what the next match is. I drop it as a surprise. You never know when it's going to come. Usually drop the poll about a week before out for the match. You only have one day to vote on it. So you need to go to whenitwascool.com. You need to look at our social media links there and make the action, make the executive decision to follow us at When It Was Cool on Twitter. We deactivated our original Twitter account because, like much of Twitter, it had become overrun with bots and spam accounts, dead accounts, and we had over 3,000 followers on there. Well, then we relaunched it, and, not a lot of people refollowed it. A lot of people, I think, believe they're following the When It Was Cool Twitter account, and they're not. They're following the old one. So please go to the front page of whenitwascool.com. Follow us there. Follow us also on Facebook. And, of course, the most important thing you can do is to become a Patreon supporter. Get instant access to over 2,000 shows. Now, germane to this discussion, not for Sting because he hadn't come along yet, but for Dory Funk Jr., I have recently written a book called Dragon King Carl Stern's 1983 Pro Wrestling Omnibus. It is available on Amazon. You can get it as a softcover book. You can get it as a Kindle book and read about every single major and many, many, many minor things, along with interesting side notes that happened in one of the most important years in pro wrestling history, 1983. And Dory Funk Jr., of course, was very much active in 1983, so you can read about that. If you are a Patreon supporter at When It Was Cool at the $10 or higher level, if you just come on there one time at the $10 level, well, you can get a digital copy of the book. It was made available to our Patreons at the $10 or higher level. So if you want to come in, see what we got, you know, cancel any time. I think you'll love it. We have a super positive, very fun community, and we have so many exclusive Patreon shows where we do biographies and talk all kinds of stuff. And we don't just do pro wrestling. We do retro pop culture, too. Maybe you're in my age demographic or within, 10 years either way. You probably grew up on Saturday morning cartoons. You probably grew up on action figures. You probably grew up on, you know, Super Friends, comic books, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Transformers, Masters of the Universe, you know, all those great sitcoms from the 80s and 90s, and even back in the 1970s. Basically, you know, anything that happened in the world between the $6 Million Man and the 1970 and Friends, and that, you know, in the 1990s. We cover that stuff. Star Wars, Rock. We've been doing all the Rocky movies here lately. All that's available right now. We're going to start doing a lot of video stuff. I just got some new equipment, setting it up. I'm getting my a little office place set up right now to begin doing more and more video this month. So that'll all be there as well. But we need you to sign up. That's what keeps us going. This is the year we're either going to go big or go home. I mean, this is the make or break year for When It Was Cool. We've been very successful so far, but I want to level up. I mean, like Super Mario Brothers, I want to hit that little thing that gives you the fireball or the, you know, the magic turtle or whatever the whole deal is. Remember that little blinking deal where you were like invincible for a while? I think riding a turtle or something. That's what we're doing. We're turtling up here at When It Was Cool this year. In January, I put out the 201 greatest pro wrestlers of all time list. That list is being discussed over in Brian Last podcast network. One of their shows over there has been breaking down the list, and I hope to be on that show pretty soon. That was our big deal in January. In February, I released my book, of course, the 1983 Pro Wrestling Omnibus. And in March, the first week of March, now by the time you're hearing this, it's over with, but pay attention. Just keep paying attention. We're going to keep dropping big stuff. We had a one-week free trial to our Patreon. So you need to be paying attention. You're missing stuff, and there's more to come. WhenItWasCool.com. So look forward to seeing you there, checking it out. And next week we'll be back with a new show in our rotation of classic pro wrestling audio shows. We love pro wrestling history and love talking about it, love studying it. And we will be back here soon with another show.
Excuse me, please. Let's don't talk negatively. Speaking of winners, surprise, surprise, whenitwascool.com is your home for retro pop culture articles and podcasts. To all our patron supporters, this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold just like you and me. Family friendly and fun, whenitwascool.com.